Hello, and welcome to the Insight Tech panel discussion, How Artificial Intelligence Puts the Smart in Smart Buildings. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with an all-star lineup of panelists today from Arkessa, KMC Controls, Prescriptive Data, and Riptide. Today's schedule consists of about 50 minutes of panel discussion, leaving 10 minutes at the end of the hour for Q&A. Before we begin, let's run down some important features of your viewing console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this webcast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate today. You can simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the panel discussion. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking and listening to our panelists and it's fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A. And if you have a question pertaining to the operation of the webcast itself, you could submit those too. And one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you. We do have an all-star lineup of panelists today. First is Ian Davidson. He's head of channel at Arkessa and brings 20 years of experience to the panel in hardware firmware design, systems integration, and IoT business development fields. Richard Newberry is CEO of KMC Controls. Richard brings over 30 years of experience to the panel around energy, oil and gas, technology manufacturing, and building automation solutions. Evan Levy is Customer Success Manager at Prescriptive Data. Evan focuses on building automation services, implementation, and energy analysis. He brings in-depth experience around energy efficiency services, having worked with a number of state agencies, utilities, and enterprise organizations. Marty Ogram is co-founder and VP of Sales at Riptide. Marty brings a wealth of experience and knowledge around AI and digital transformation around smart building, IoT systems automation, and energy efficiency. Marty also has a background in real estate and construction, which complements today's topics nicely. Before we begin, I want to talk about AI and machine learning. So the definition of artificial intelligence, for those that might be a little less familiar with it, is a computer system that is able to perform tasks that normally require human intelligence. Examples of these include things like visual perception, speech, decision making based on inputs, and robotics. Machine learning is also a subset of AI. It involves statistical modeling and algorithm implementation to perform tasks without explicit instructions. You know, unlike C or C++ or any language you may be familiar with programmatically, these rely on patterns and inference deduction or inference engines. So that's kind of the context of today's panel. Want to welcome our panelists. Let's just get started and dive right into topic one. What are the drivers behind building automation and artificial intelligence? Let's start there. We like to cover in this section, what are the key challenges and opportunities driving AI capabilities in building automation? Is it energy savings? Is it tenant security? Or maybe even information security for enterprise buildings? How do you collect KPIs and analytics to optimize building profitability and usability? And what are the key drivers for building automation AI? Let's start with Evan today. Evan? Tell us about what your thoughts are on topic one.
Sure. Thanks for having me on the webinar. So it comes down to the biggest problems faced by building owners and developers today. The first driver we're seeing is operational expense reduction. Ever since the 2008 financial crisis, owners have been looking for new ways to reduce their operational costs, and this has led to a rise in new building technologies that we now refer to as PropTech. Technologies like internet-connected BMS and HVAC systems, smart utility meters, IoT sensors, and building operating systems are all providing owners with insights into their building operations, which ultimately reduce their utilities, energy, and operational costs. The second driver we're seeing is real-time building reporting and insights. Energy and sustainability managers are spending hundreds of hours a year combining different data sets and spreadsheets for cost-benefit analysis, sustainability reports, and budget forecasting. Owners are looking for a solution that allows them to combine different data sets and cut down the time they're spending playing around with data. The third driver we're seeing is anomaly detection and capital expense prediction. Owners are looking for a way to predict building equipment failures and plan ahead for major capital expense investments. Fourth, owners are looking for a way to guarantee and improve tenant comfort and retention, whether it's through closely monitoring interior temperature or experimenting with air quality sensors. Their ultimate goal is to create a better tenant experience. Fifth, owners are looking to improve their portfolio's sustainability. Sustainability is becoming a cultural topic and a potential driver for tenant retention. For example, New York City's Local Law 97 mandates that all buildings over 25,000 square feet have to reduce their carbon emissions in 2024. This has helped usher in a new generation of owners looking to reduce their portfolio's greenhouse gas emissions. Lastly, we see a number of owners looking to drive creative revenue sources through amenities and tenant engagement apps. When you put together all these trends, we predict that successful asset managers in 2020 and beyond will be judged by the following metrics. First, they'll be judged by speed. How fast can you identify a problem and solve it? Cost reduction. How much are you reducing utilities, energy, and other operational costs? Cost prediction. Can you proactively identify capital expense projects before they turn into mishaps? Increasing building profit, which is the combination of cost reduction and creative revenue opportunities. Improving sustainability by reducing energy usage and integrating with renewables. And lastly, improving tenant retention, finding ways to reduce hot and cold calls and improving response time to tenant requests.
Wow, that's a fantastic synopsis. I mean, we asked for some drivers, and those are some very powerful ones in terms of, you know, tenant happiness, anomaly to, you know, having to do with building management and maintenance, and then energy efficiency and profitability. Boy, those are those things that you mentioned are very key here. Let's go with Jason. Jason, your thoughts.
This is Richard with KMC. Thank you for having me on the webinar today. I would like to take a little twist to what Evan talked about. I totally agree with everything he said. I'd like to kind of focus on the mid-sized building space and just point out the fact that there are 5 million buildings in the United States that do not really have any smarts in them, and they are using 15 to 40% more energy than they should be. So energy savings is a key driver for that space. Also, indoor air quality is important. The drive for more workforce workspace optimization is also very, very important. Preventing emergency outages, reducing repair costs, and as Evan pointed out, the need and the openness, really, to cloud-based building controls, which gives remote access, agility, and scalability. Another trend we're seeing that is really a driver behind building automation is we're seeing the convergence of IT and OT, and the IT group is having more responsibility for the physical aspects of the building, and that is driving a faster adoption. When it was under the OT space, there were a lot of impediments because of security and networking issues, and we're seeing that change. Also, as Evan pointed out, real-time cloud visualization is a very important thing. Another thing we really see as a driver is the lack of talent for building facilities, technical talent. By bringing in AI into buildings, you're able to stretch the ability of the limited number of technical people to manage more buildings. So it's a huge driver to reduce the impact of the facilities management talent shortage. Also, this also enables a service for these buildings to allow that to become an operating expense versus a capital expense. And even in the small to medium-sized building space, there is a continuing demand for greener buildings. And so that is also clearly a driver for AI in building automation.
Okay, great. I think you mentioned you built on what Evan was saying there in terms of a lot of the things he mentioned, as well as optimizing the building talent or the resources that it takes to manage and deal with buildings. So I think that's an interesting part too. You also brought up IT and IT-OT convergence, and I think that's a common theme not only in building automation but also, you know, IoT in general. It seems like that's becoming a common source here of or a common occurrence. Marty, what are your thoughts on topic one?
Yeah, so if we look at the drivers for any kind of tools to run your building, we first really see across the all building types that at the end of the day, building operators want a well-run building. And we see almost every facility type is a critical facility in that, you know, retailers, it's where revenue happens, schools, it's where kids are learning, hospitals or healthcare, it's where people are getting healthy. And so the core value and the core need is, how do I efficiently manage my building in a way that supports the business needs of the facilities, the productive students, healthy patients, a great retail environment. And the sad state, unfortunately, of sort of the existing tools, I'll call it the traditional building automation systems, that have been the go-to systems that building operators have reached to, is they were really designed in a completely different era than where we are today. And that era was about, you know, having an engineer in the building with a rather complicated user interface. You pretty much needed to be a facility engineer with your hands on the wheel, taking care of your building, tuning systems. It was sort of half software, half human expertise. And as some of the other speakers have mentioned, you know, we've moved with those tools to a place where buildings aren't really running as optimally as they can, especially when we look at bringing the modern technology stack to this problem. And if you just look at the statistics, and Department of Energy has spent tons of money researching this, as well as other leading research institutes and sustainability groups around, the sad state of buildings is, you know, more than 30% of the energy is wasted. And much of that is hidden waste, meaning we have HVAC systems that are sitting on rooftops that are potentially delivering on comfort. Like, everybody feels comfortable, but that machine is working twice as hard as it needs to, and therefore it's just you know, sucking energy and sucking dollars out of the building. And one of the hidden reasons why building systems aren't really optimized and are wasting energy is because we haven't moved to a way where we're servicing equipment constantly maintaining. It's more of a run-to-fail environment. And we see the HVAC service industry is still operating, perhaps one of the few industries that's still operating the same way it did before the internet. And that is, the human is the sensor calling and saying they have a problem. The machine, the HVAC system on the rooftop might be running and having an issue, but nobody knows about it, and they wait until it actually fails, and then that's when somebody picks up the phone and calls, and so somebody gets in a truck and manually drives there. And so that causes a whole bunch of energy waste. It causes a whole bunch of comfort issues, and we see that there is lots of room for improvement to help that overall building experience improve indoor air quality, improve the energy usage, and just run a better building. And that is, at the end of the day, the driver for these type of solutions.
Right. Yeah, you make a lot of interesting points as well in terms of building management that supports the intended class of the tenants and the industries there. And that's an interesting concept in terms of just, you know, the nuts and bolts of energy efficiency and everything. But how should the building be designed to be able to support the intended tenants, as well as you know, you mentioned buildings designed in a different era, so bringing legacy and how the challenges associated with smart buildings with legacy equipment. Ian, your thoughts.
Thank you, Kurt. Yeah, so Ian Davidson here from Arkesa, and Arkesa is a wireless connectivity service provider, and we provide services to a whole range of industries, but including the smart building space. And what I love about this area is that rather unusually in the technology sector, we have, I think, some alignment between society benefits, the needs of the building owners, building occupiers, and the capabilities of the technology sector. And I say that because, well, I think it's been touched on by my colleagues here, but if you look at some of the statistics from the International Energy Authority, and it just backs up what Marty was just saying, that buildings themselves and the construction sector combined to consume around 36% of the global energy consumption and account for about 40% of the total CO2 emission. So, you know, just in those stats alone, you've got a sense of what the challenge is. And I thought rather than just build on or repeat some of what's been said already, I might just share a few real-world examples where, you know, we've seen some successful deployments into the building space. And, you know, I'm here in London, and, you know, London's big. It's not Shanghai, but it's big. And one of the, you know, it's one of the highest cost areas for commercial property, and that's in terms of rental and in terms of operating costs. So energy efficiency is you know, it's been said, I'll say it again, but then, you know, we see customers all of ours wanting to also optimize how space is used and then also looking to try and automate some of the manual inspections of assets, and especially those that are around health and safety or insurance or some form of compliance. And so one of my favorite stories is a building here in London that we've deployed an office occupancy solution in there, and the customer ultimately wants to reduce their floor space for reasons I've just explained, but they want to do that in a way that doesn't impact their staff. And so, you know, we've fitted it out with desk occupancy sensors, with air quality monitors and more. But ultimately, what it allows their staff members to do is, as they're arriving in the building or coming off the transport network, they're able to essentially book their hot desk for the day. But they can book it in a location that they like, that's the right temperature, that the air quality is good, or they can even just book their favourite desk. And this is real. This is deployed, and that's really cool. We love that, and that's been rolled out globally now. The other example I'd perhaps like to share is the London Airport. So again, busy places where you've got a lot of different services all sharing the same building space. So for example, the restrooms are there, and then there's retail. And I mentioned restrooms because, you know, there's a lot of water around there, and water, when it escapes, gets everywhere. And we have seen examples from our customers at the London airports to where they've had water, you know, destroy retail environments. And that is huge cost. So, you know, we've automated, you know, the water leak detection capability, and there's a sort of rapid response type capability in that. So, you know, some real kind of specific problems that I've just described, but with that, that's driven the deployment of typically wireless sensor technology and an infrastructure around that includes some algorithms. I'm going to stop short of calling it AI, but certainly some algorithms that are running on edge devices or in the cloud. And once you have that, you can start to build in more capabilities and provide other services. So it's starting to come, and we've got some real-world examples to show that.
Yeah, we're looking forward to hearing more about those examples as well in some of the in the subsequent topics. Optimizing how space is used and automation of manual inspection of assets for compliance and insurance were kind of interesting additional twists that Ian mentioned in terms of what's driving AI and machine learning. Great. So that finishes out topic one. Let's move into topic two now. Adding AI into building automation. So now that we understand the drivers and what kinds of features and capabilities we're trying to add using AI, how is AI being used in those applications? Is AI the only in the cloud or data center? Is there a distributed intelligence? Are you adding sensors and gateways into the buildings at the edge to do some of this? And then to Marty's point, okay, we have these buildings that were built in eras not understanding what IoT and smart buildings are. What are the prerequisites that enable AI to be possible in the building? Richard, let's have you kick this off.
Okay. KMC has been in the building automation space for now 50 years, and we provide innovative, easy-to-use building automation and technology solutions. So as Marty pointed out, a lot of the older building automation platforms are very difficult to integrate with. They are proprietary. And so what you really need, what we see happening is a lot of large building owners are really seeing the demand, and they fortunately have kind of the lab they can work with because they own the buildings and they're really motivated, and we're starting to see a lot of analytics in the cloud, and we also are seeing two main drivers, again, when it comes to how AI is being used in building automation. Sensors are getting less expensive, so you really need sensors to get the data to the cloud. And also just open source software that is allowing companies to really embrace the new technology, the new software that's available, and get there faster. So we see that you're going to have cloud-based solutions, and you're going to have intelligence at the edge depending on the application. If it's life safety, you can't have latency. You have to have real time. You're going to have that intelligence at the edge. So it's going to be a combination. But with the cost of sensors going down, it's really allowing companies to really embrace it more fully. But again, I come back to the prerequisite to enable AI to be possible in a building is, I believe, a willingness to embrace the notion that you need to start with a platform that you can put into the building that will allow you to solve some immediate pain points, that will be a platform you can build on to make that building smarter over time. Some of the challenges we've seen where people, of course, the biggest opportunity in the United States and around the world is existing buildings. So you come up with the challenge of integrating to those old systems. So you really need the participation of not only IT, but the facility people to embrace the idea that we need to work together and we need to make sure that the legacy systems can communicate. And we're seeing some tagging libraries coming into existence that are helping overcome some of that proprietary and difficult data that's not easily accessed. So we see in building automation, there's a proprietary already open platform called BACnet. So we're seeing that being used to talk to some of these old systems, as well as Modbus with some devices and SMP with other devices.
Okay, great. Yeah, so you're thinking both edge and cloud for safety kind of at the edge for low latency kinds of applications, and cloud for the more larger compute analytics kinds of applications, and brought up some really interesting ways to integrate old buildings with new technology in terms of the platforms. Marty, your thoughts.
Sure. So an AI strategy to us really starts with a data strategy, because it doesn't matter if we're analyzing trends on Twitter, Netflix, Amazon, or in buildings, you cannot do AI without lots of data. And therefore, data becomes sort of the centerpiece prerequisite. And we actually see in buildings that there's sort of three stages, three prerequisites in order to be AI ready. And the first one is really they're just getting that data. And as Richard mentioned, getting data out of buildings hopefully buildings and building equipment have moved to open standards like BACnet and maybe some of the wireless standards and Modbus and metering. There's a variety of standards. But what you don't want is proprietary systems that are locked from getting access to the data. And so that piece of getting data is sort of step one, foundational. Every single building out there, anybody who is buying equipment should be buying equipment that is able to communicate with other systems and devices and get access to that data. And the second foundational piece is the cleaning of the data. And Richard mentioned about data tagging. If anybody's ever done something very simple on trying to get data, whether it was just building a mailer, and if you don't have your naming conventions organized, and if you don't have the data organized in a way that once you get lots of it, you can actually make it easy to digest, then you're putting yourself very far away from ever arriving at the benefits of AI. So cleaning your data, having a data model, having a data naming strategy, those are all foundational elements on the road towards AI. And the last one that I would say is the needs of AI. AI is about computing at fast scale. Well, that's all the elements of modern computing. It's all cloud computing. And so if your strategy in your building is relying on technology only from last year's era, that client server with a server in the bottom of the basement, a limited PC, well, we know we can't do AI on our own laptops, our own PCs, so we can't do that in a building PC either. So somehow your system needs to feed into and or be unified with a cloud computing-based platform, something built in the modern era that it's able to take advantage of cloud computing and do the type of calculations that you need for AI. So those are all the areas that we see are probably primary from a AI foundational prerequisite.
Okay, yeah, I think you mentioned some standards-based, like interoperable kinds of things, don't lock into the proprietary things so you can get access to the data. And then another interesting thing in terms of scaling the data, naming it, organizing it, modeling it so you can actually make sense of it and use it effectively. Ian. Ian, you're up.
Thank you. So one of the challenges that we've seen as we've developed our business with partners in the building space is that it probably varies city to city, country to country, but we often find that you have a fairly complicated sort of a number of stakeholders, let's say, around most buildings these days. So it's unusual for companies to actually own and operate their own buildings, we find. So you have building owners, you have the tenants, facilities management, you have IT and OT, and often these are all disparate organizations, services are outsourced, and so forth. So I think as you go to market with your capabilities, you obviously have to develop a sense of, well, who's going to buy this solution from me? But on top of that, you have to have the ability, I think, to think about both edge and cloud, and adjust the solution to match. Well, not only some of the points that Marty just touched on before me, but to match budgets as well. And then also have the ability to retrofit into, well, existing buildings, because let's face it, probably 99% of the market is an existing building as opposed to new builds. But then also you have the potential, I think, in your solution to overlay onto existing systems, and the cloud is a great place to actually start to work on the interoperability type elements of it. So when we look at wireless sensor technology, then we see a great demand for solutions that are wireless, perhaps that's obvious, but also batteryless, if need be, or at least have long battery life. And then beyond that, though, once you get the data from these sensors, either to your edge devices or to your servers, whether they're on premise or in the cloud, you know, you need to find a way to broker data from additional sources. And I think you've got to be prepared to go out and find a way to do that, and don't just assume that every one of these stakeholders that I mentioned at the start is going to play ball. Chances are they won't. So, you know, having the ability to share data from different sources in an anonymized, secure way is perhaps essential for the early stages as you're rolling out your solutions. And there are capabilities out there that do just that.
Yeah, that is interesting. And one thing that popped into my mind when you were mentioning that, in terms of this is just not building automation systems. These things may need data sources like tenant records or billing records in the back end pieces that, you know, might be kept on spreadsheets for small organizations, or maybe, you know, in databases for larger ones. And so that's an important consideration as well. Evan.
Yeah, so just to kind of piggyback on what some of my colleagues are saying, and maybe share some context. Our company, Prescriptive Data, created a building operating system called Nantum, and it's designed to integrate with all kinds of building data systems and sensors and kind of reduce these data silos for an overall integration. And we think there's kind of a common misconception regarding getting started with building automation and AI. We find most of our clients use four basic tools to get started. First, they use a BMS system, and as my colleagues mentioned, a lot of BMS systems already adhere to common data communication protocols like BACnet, which is developed by the American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers, or ASHRAE. And most building automation service providers are able to connect to most BMS systems via their own hardware, gateway, or JACE, which they install on site or on the edge. And these mini computers are able to then either read data from or write data to the BMS system. The second thing we need are internet-connected utility meters. Most commercial building owners have already invested in utility meters with the ability to collect data. It is possible and increasingly common to install power metering hardware to have real-time energy data. This allows building owners to understand and pinpoint trends in energy usage on a 5-minute or less data interval basis, rather than wait until the end of the building cycle to find out how much energy they've consumed. In many cases, utility meters are already integrated with their building owners' BMS systems. Additionally, there's utilities like Con Edison here in New York City who are beginning to pilot and offer real-time energy data through the Green Button Initiative, which is allowing another data source in the cloud to understand energy usage directly from the utility companies that charge for it. The third thing you need, we believe, is occupancy sensors. Some building lobby turnstiles provide open APIs to occupancy data, which allow building owners to get a real-time total of tenants in a building. For an even more granulated and recommended approach, you can install people-counting occupancy sensors at access points like elevator banks. Further, Wi-Fi-based occupancy counting allows owners to know how many people are in their building per floor, simply by reading the devices people carry throughout the day. Finally, you need a building operating system that will aggregate all of this data and make use of it. It's one thing to have all your data in a dashboard. The real value is leveraging the latest in machine learning, data science, and building science to identify ways to optimize building operations. A true building operating system will pull in the BMS data, the metering data, and occupancy data to provide recommendations as well as automate core building functions. This is where the potential for the smart building movement really starts to take off. Within weeks, these four building systems, building owners can be able to experience the benefits of AI, through things like reducing energy and utility costs through calculated startups and midday energy conservation measures. Second, they're getting real-time energy data on their building performance, knowing how many people are in my building right now, how much energy is being consumed right now, and what's it costing me, how comfortable are my tenants right now, how many carbon emissions are in my building producing. Third, there's this building anomaly detection, or sending alerts when something isn't working properly. This helps to reduce capital expenses and tenant hot and cold calls as well.
Okay, great. Thanks, Evan. Another set of really good points in terms of occupancy accounting and things like that. That's an interesting addition to this as well. And then using, you know, that to feed and blend with the BMS and the utilities and all that kind of stuff. So based on all the previous discussions here, I'm really excited for the third topic now. Also want to remind the audience, we are getting some questions in. I encourage you to take advantage of the expertise we have here and ask questions as well for your particular use cases, examples, or questions you have. Topic three, so we are to the use cases and examples. So I asked the panelists to pick a building automation case and kind of summarize the overview, goals, objectives, and how AI was applied or machine learning or how it was upgraded to accommodate AI. How does the AI training phase work in building automation? How does the AI learn and adjust for all these things like occupancy, tenants, power, locations, all that kind of stuff? And any sort of key important takeaways you think the audience needs to know for developing an architecture or implementing AI in building automation. Marty.
Yes, well, I'd love to share on one of our favorite customers, which is Nordstrom's. Probably everyone on the call is familiar with Nordstrom's being one of the premier retailers in North America. They started on a mission with us to improve the comfort in their buildings, improve sustainability, and of course, save money wherever they can. And that journey has led us to a point where we're currently wired into all 400 Nordstrom's, streaming data, real-time data out of their equipment, and they have over 3,000 pieces of equipment just looking at it from their HVAC perspective, but we're tied into HVAC, we're tied into lighting, we're tied into some of their energy assets, and bringing that data, which is just the data alone from all of those assets is over 500,000 data points, into a cloud computing environment where we're storing, cleaning, tagging the data, and having it ready for them for optimization. And one thing about Nordstrom's, well, Mr. Nordstrom believes that 72 degrees is the right comfort level for every shopper. But after all these years, and including having building traditional building automation system in their stores, the teams over in Seattle never could really prove to Mr. Nordstrom how they were doing on delivering on that 72-degree standard. And so one of the first things that we did was take a look at this data that's coming in across, set a comfort index, and with essentially a one-click report, be able to deliver on exactly how all of that equipment is performing in terms of delivering on the standard. And they drove to a key performance indicator of making sure that they were 90% and above across all of their stores in delivering in that standard across all zones. And one of the second things that we did is then identify those outliers that weren't performing and give that in a very easy-to-read report so they could hand it down to their facility teams that are local to help drive, you know, where is it that they could prioritize and need to prioritize in terms of improvements. And so that really set us the foundation for moving towards a real analytics and optimization strategy that is now moving towards an AI and machine learning. And from an AI machine learning strategy perspective, we are interested in a recommendation engine for Nordstrom so that they could determine when there was opportunities for energy optimization that didn't impact comfort negatively. And so now that we've had the 4 years' worth of data that we've collected, we are building a recommendation engine to help look at how and when they can make adjustments on settings of equipment. And we're training a model to know how to do that using AI. And therefore, we really expect that we can put Nordstrom in a place that they can still maintain Mr. Nordstrom's standard and do it in a way where the software is helping determine that fine-tuning, the fine-tuning needed for energy savings, and let AI and machine learning direct those changes so that we can drive improved energy savings throughout all the Nordstroms.
Great. That's a really neat example. And maybe in the Q&A, maybe you can talk about the challenges involving legacy Nordstrom buildings. They're in malls and things, too, so I suppose that has some unique challenges as well in terms of integrating these kinds of things. Ian.
Yeah, thank you. So earlier, when I spoke up front, I touched on real quick on a couple of examples, real use cases being deployed and around the world, and perhaps I'll just recap on a couple of those real quick. But then I also wanted to address the architecture part of the question. Because I think that's important, and I noticed we had a question from the audience on that point as well. So yeah, when I spoke earlier, I touched on one of the challenges we see around the rising cost, not just of energy, of course, but just the rising cost of real estate, especially in, you know, these high demand cities, you know, like London, like New York, no doubt, San Francisco, Shanghai, etc., and these prices are just going up and up. And of course, in parallel with that, we've got, you know, just a shift in terms of how people want to work. You know, they want to hot desk and work from home or work off site when they can. And, you know, this has created, I think, a good opportunity for all of us, actually. And we've got some this real examples with our clients where we've, you know, installed sensors which are wireless, which are batteryless, and this is one of the key things. So when I mean batteryless, I don't mean that they're plugged into the mains power supply. I mean they have no power. They are self-powered. They're scavenging energy from the environment around them, and that might be heat or light or movement or so forth. And of course, these are more expensive. But what we've done is created here a solution that can be installed really quickly and you know, without any additional costs. You know, there's no need for routing of cables or power or whatever to these sensors. And then of course they can be redeployed really quickly. So I'm talking about in-ocean technology, and that's something that's worth a look, I think. So in this case, you know, we've used this capability together with air quality sensors, and environmental sensors, so temperature, humidity, et cetera, and all of that then is available in the cloud, or actually it's an external service provider. So it's, you know, it's a service that's independent of the actual building itself. So that's really neat. And architecturally, I think the key thing is that, you know, it's an overlay onto the existing building. We're using this wireless technology and battery technology and very little edge compute in this case. But in other examples, you know, we actually have to keep the data on premises. So the airport example I gave earlier, all of the data, and I should say once again, it's wireless and battery technology, which is easy to deploy into wet spaces. And again, it's in ocean. But in this case, a lot of the computing is done at the end, perhaps, you know, on premise. So architecturally, I think, I said already, and I'm repeating myself a little bit, but I think you've got to be agile. Don't assume one size is going to fit all. Adapt it to suit the environment you're deploying into. Adapt it to suit the budgets and so forth. And right. And I think as we go forward, I come from the cellular space. As we go forward, we're going to see some new capabilities there, technologies like narrowband IoT or LTEM, so horrible acronyms, but this is new cellular technology specifically designed to support high-density deployment of sensors, both indoor and outdoor. And that's going to enable us to deploy new systems in new ways, so look out for that.
Okay, great. Thanks. Good points. Richard.
Yes, I'd like to share our story with Stewart Country Day School. It's a private all-girls school that we started our journey with them about 3 years ago, and we sat down and we talked about the vision that the facility manager had of making Stuart a very smart facility that could be used as a lab, a campus as a lab. So we began our journey with them, and we, in this case, they had a lot of proprietary controls in their facility. So we set out a plan to replace those controls with KMC BACnet IP controls and an open platform. And the IoT, or the open platform that we installed at Stuart, is Commander. It's our open, secure, scalable solution. And as we went through the journey, the side benefit is that the school has reduced their energy spend by about 43%. We went from just connecting Commander to the HVAC to connecting it to the refrigerated areas, to the backup generators, they actually have a protected stream on their property. It's a beautiful property near Princeton University. Stream data, weather data, and we also connected to the BACnet shades, did a lot of sub-metering. But the exciting part of it was that we are now in a position to make this data available to students. And we've deployed analytics, and we're beginning to learn more and more. But the cool thing is we've gotten the students involved in this. Curriculum is being written, and the statistics professor, for example, is very excited about being able to get this real data for the students to use in their labs. So campus as a lab is pretty exciting, and again, the benefits were they have saved 43% on their energy spend, and they have a facility that is very, very connected, and we're now working on solving their, it's a private school, and so they have this traffic problem where when parents are coming to pick up their kids, they have these terrible traffic issues, and so we are actually getting the students involved with trying to get sensors and get the data to start trying to solve that problem. We've also deployed Commander in a grow facility. So think orchids. Orchids are a very complicated plant. And we partnered with Alvarez Technology Group and Matsui, the largest manufacturer of orchids in the United States. And there we actually put Commander in to basically look at temperature, humidity, and CO2 using our sensors and controllers to help them validate the old system, proprietary system they have in place. There was no way to communicate to it. They have old PLCs, 25 years old, an old front end that was made in Holland that's very expensive, and they were losing confidence in it. So Commander is being used there to actually validate and looking at trends and giving them the data they will need to decide when they should replace that system. But what's cool about the Commander solution and grow facilities is the huge growth and opportunity for other grow facilities, the cannabis opportunity. And there, obviously, a lot of that is new facilities, so they can really be not have to worry about proprietary systems, but be able to go in and plan it out accordingly to really accomplish all of the needs for regulation, but also the unique needs for the environment, the humidity, temperature, and CO2.
Right. And some really good use cases there, especially excited about the school one where you talked about, hey, reducing energy and getting students involved and making use of the data beyond that. That's really customizing the AI and applications toward the quote-unquote tenants, which is really awesome. Evan, what are your thoughts on topic three?
Yeah, so I'd like to share the story of one of our largest clients, which is the Rooted Management Company. So Rooted Management operates one of the largest privately owned real estate portfolios of Class A commercial properties in New York City. It includes 16 commercial office buildings totaling 10.5 million square feet, each with very different building systems. Rudy's experience with AI began in 2015 with the pilot deployment of Vantum, which is our in-house real estate, our real-time energy management system. So Vantum integrated data from the building automation systems, utility meters, and occupancy counts from the lobby turnstiles. Additionally, there were IoT temperature sensors that were deployed to provide increased visibility of each building's interior space environments in various tenant spaces. Rudy's owners and engineering team prioritized minimizing the energy consumption of each building without sacrificing comfort obligations. Sophisticated software algorithms would ingest the building's recent historical data and real-time data and marry them with real-time weather data and weather forecasts, ultimately to predict building conditions and to deliver recommended actions for the building operators. The first energy savings algorithm we developed was focused on calculated building startup. Rudin needed to predict and create a customized building startup for the next day that would bring building interior space temperatures into compliance with their tenants' leases by the time that the building was occupied. The prediction takes into account the next day's weather, the lease obligated schedule, the building's plant capacity, and the likely temperatures within the building just prior to startup. The recommended startup time is designed to consume the least amount of energy while bringing the building into compliance with the lease obligated comfort settings. Before Vantum, each building with a lease obligated schedule would start up at a fixed time each day, many hours before the building was occupied. It would run at a constant capacity throughout the day and then ramp down at a fixed time each night. This is a common practice of building operators. The startup time was determined by the Rudin's engineer on duty based on forecasted weather conditions for the day, the engineer's own knowledge of the building plan, and the time required for the building's interior space to reach a comfortable level. It's common for the engineer to start up many hours before doors open and ensure the building is within comfortable range before the first occupant arrives. Ultimately, these AI calculated startup times save energy and money by delaying the time of startup for each day. The next energy saving algorithm we developed was focused on midday and end of day HVAC automation. Another strategy of data science improving building operations was Vantum's capacity control strategies, or what we call ramps. Vantum will auto-adjust the building's mechanical system capacity according to the actual building occupancy during the day. Early in the development of Vantum, the Rudin staff noticed that occupancy would begin to decrease during lunchtime and rise again in early afternoon. Using deep building learning algorithms, this double-humped occupancy pattern is an opportunity to reduce energy consumption by adjusting the building mechanical plant capacity using devices like variable frequency drives, connected to pumps, fans, and compressors that match the building's occupancy profile. Vantum would automatically command the BMS to execute a predetermined ramp down sequence near lunchtime to reduce energy consumption, and also to automatically command the BMS to ramp up the building's plant as tenants returned after lunch. The same occupancy-based algorithms would allow an end-of-day ramp down to occur when the occupancy level starts to decrease, allowing for a real-time ramp down as tenants leave the building. By aggregating all three use cases, the startup, the ramping up and down during lunch hours, and shutting down the building based on real-time occupancy, that led to an average of 31% energy savings across Rudin's commercial building, equating to $5 million a year. It also led to 70% reduction in hot and cold calls and a 35% reduction in carbon emissions.
Very good. Lots of really interesting use cases there, too. The building startup to bring the climate tenant specs up, I think, is really interesting, and all that's involved there. I never stopped to think about an engineer having to do all that to get the building up and going during the day. So that's really interesting. So great panel. We are now to the Q&A, so want to encourage our audience to continue to ask questions. We do have some pretty good ones in here we want to take care of. Let's start with Ian, and if anyone else wants to jump in on this, they can too. We'll also have to keep this to kind of lightning round response speed, 30 seconds or less, so we can get to as many questions as we can. How can we mitigate edge computing and energy efficiency of the edge devices, which are battery operated, Ian?
Yeah, thank you, Kurt. Yeah, and I saw that one come in earlier, and I referenced it in my earlier example, knowing that we would be pretty short of time. So it's a great question, and And it's a tricky one to answer, you know. And certainly, if we look at what some of our cloud service provider partners are recommending, you know, from an architecture point of view, then you know, doing everything on the cloud, you know, and Intel would say, you know, use the edge, and everyone is right. However, there are some fundamental, you know, constraints around most projects, and that is budget, and then practical things like how do I install, and what about power, and what about batteries, you know. So when I spoke earlier, then, you know, I referenced a technology called Enocean, Enocean, and that's a technology that came out of Siemens a while ago, so it's pretty mature, but actually it's specifically designed to help with these sort of situations, and there's a whole range of different sensors that are available, and it's growing, it's scavenging energy from the environment around it, heat, light, movement. So a light switch, for example, is powered by the button press, and just the movement involved in doing that is enough to generate energy that transmits datagrams, a datagram that says on or off, if you think about it. It doesn't need to be much. But then ultimately, the key thing for us as a company as we go forward is the new cellular-based technology specifically designed, but have a higher in building penetration and a higher density, support a higher density type of deployments in and around buildings and in and around smart cities. So there are new technologies coming that are just more energy efficient, and then you've got to look at that balance between sensors, edge, and cloud, and come up with the right solution, the right architecture that suits your power budget or indeed your financial budget.
Right, okay. Evan, you talked about predictive analytics and maintenance. What's the role of edge computing in that?
Well, we find it's the predictive analytics side of stuff is mostly done in our cloud. I mean, for example, we do a prediction on electric demand for the next several days based on weather, historic data, and that allows giving building owners and operators a sort of look ahead on what they can expect their building and perhaps react accordingly. And additionally, we're able to sort of track energy data to create essentially benchmarks and visual indicators on a similar type of day. And this is all kind of using predictive analytics to show an operator what's possible and be able to react accordingly.
I see. Okay. Marty, what's the most costly part of implementing these types of solutions you mentioned?
The most costly part is going to be getting your wiring connecting into the existing equipment and systems if they are legacy. And that becomes probably the biggest challenge, but there are lots of ways, some that were just mentioned, to be able to do it. Once you get the data streaming, the good news is the cost of data storage, cloud computing, all of the modern features that enable AI have really driven down in price over the years. So more of the hardship is right there on getting connected into your existing legacy equipment.
Okay, great, thanks. Richard, are you seeing an increasing demand for greener buildings and high-tech spaces?
Yes, we certainly are. And again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the
Richard,
the driver. Yeah, I'm sorry. The driver is. Again, energy costs. So the Green Building Initiative kind of started waning, but we're seeing an increase in that coming back, and also a huge demand for high-tech spaces.
Okay, so there are some initiatives even that are ongoing that are increasing the demand for energy efficiency, not just retail or not just energy savings and cost itself.
Yes.
Okay. Unfortunately, we made one round robin through, and unfortunately that brings us to the end of our panel discussion. We had some excellent information exchanged here. I want to thank Ian, Richard, Evan and Marty for sharing their insights on applying AI to smart buildings, and some of the considerations and examples you mentioned were just excellent. I want to thank you, the audience, for attending today, contributing those excellent questions remotely. This panel webcast is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or used without express written permission. I want to thank everyone for attending, and have a great day.